Perhaps we should sink a ship. I mean, we're past the point of just summoning the Russian ambassador, aren't we?
Strictly speaking, it could justify an attack, but we shouldn't do them that favor.
The Russians will not be deterred if we throw cotton wool at them.
Can anyone at this table assess what the Russians actually want? What is their objective?
To make the Baltics Russian.
I'd rather say to demonstrate NATO and the EU's inability to act.
And then to make the Baltics Russian.
I am urging you. This is now a matter for the very top level. You need to speak with Trump directly.
You are the Chancellor now, Mr. Tauber. I believe you can do it.
Imagine this. It is Tuesday, October 27th, 2026. Dawn breaks over Berlin's government district. Lights are on in the Federal Chancellery. The Chancellor has convened his most senior ministers and advisors for an emergency meeting. The reason? Russian troops are amassed at the Lithuanian border, apparently preparing to cross into NATO territory. The scenario is fictional, but it is not far-fetched. In security and political leadership circles, there is broad agreement on one point. Russia seeks to reassert itself as a dominant power in Europe.
We are Russia's next target. And we are already in harm's way.
This was NATO's Secretary General Mark Rutte. At the World Economic Forum in Davos, Canada's Prime Minister Mark Carney put it this way.
Every day, we're reminded that we live in an era of great power rivalry, that the rules-based order is fading, that the strong can do what they can and the weak must suffer what they must.
The reality of this world means we Europeans must defend ourselves and we must depend on ourselves.
That was the president of the EU Commission, Ursula von der Leyen. From a European perspective, another factor adds to the uncertainty. The United States no longer appears predictable as a security partner under President Donald Trump.
No, I would not protect you. In fact, I would encourage them to do whatever the hell they want. You gotta pay. You gotta pay your bills.
Against that backdrop, we ran an experiment. It is a Monday morning in December 2025. We are inside a classroom at Helmut Schmidt University, the University of the German Armed Forces in Hamburg. Microphones stand at each seat around a U-shaped table. In front of them are nameplates: Federal Chancellor, Defense Minister, Intelligence Chief. But this is not the real cabinet. Instead, we gathered retired military leaders, former top officials, diplomats and security experts and asked them to take on the roles of Germany's federal government and its allies for one day. A second team plays the Kremlin. They face off against each other. We wanted to understand what would happen if Russia attacked NATO. At the end of the day, only one team will have achieved its strategic objectives. My name is Carolina Drüten. I am the international security correspondent at the German media outlet Welt. This is Ernstfall. What if Russia attacks NATO inside a German war game? Episode 1. Deception. We first published the German version of this podcast on February 5th, 2026. It sparked a wide debate in Germany and beyond about Europe's readiness, NATO's cohesion, and Germany's ability to lead in a crisis.
Tonight, there is concerning news about NATO's reported weakness against a potential Russian invasion.
The German newspaper Die Welt organized a war game.
A new war game tests German reaction time should Russia take advantage of gaps in NATO protections.
A high-level war game recently conducted by German publication Welt, in cooperation with the Helmut Schmidt University of the German Army, suggests Europe would struggle to respond.
And when it comes to the Welt exercise, we do not know all the specifics of the war game. I can assure you, we are well prepared.
Those reactions show that the questions that our war game raised go far beyond Germany. It's why we decided to produce an English version of this podcast. A war game is, in essence, a thought experiment. People step into specific roles. For example, members of the German government or representatives of the Kremlin, and work through a crisis scenario. The idea is simple. You try to think through a real emergency before it actually happens, because identifying weaknesses in advance helps address them. It's a bit like a fire drill. If the fire brigade arrives too late at a burning house, the response is reviewed and the plans are improved. Governments and militaries conduct these kinds of simulations all the time. The difference in our case is, their findings usually remain classified. We decided to make ours public. Because how decisions are made in a crisis and what those decisions are concerns all of us. In recent years, journalists have begun experimenting with public war games as well. One notable example was the war game by Sky News, which explored how Britain might respond to a Russian attack. We wanted this experiment to be run with the same level of professionalism as the closed-door simulations held in ministries or in parliament. That's why we asked the German Wargaming Center to support the project. It is based at Helmut Schmidt University, the University of the German Armed Forces in Hamburg. They normally design and conduct war games for companies, government ministries, and other public institutions. In the months leading up to the simulation, they closely advised us. On the game day itself, they are responsible for adjudication. They structure the process and document the participants' decisions. On one side is the blue team. It represents friendly forces. In our case, the German federal government. This team is led by the German Chancellor. In the original simulation, most participants spoke German. For this version, we translated their original statements into English and had them voiced by fellow journalists.
We have a shared objective: to push back against Russia, to support our allies, and to make clear that Germany is ready to play an active role.
In the war game, Peter Tauber plays the role of the Chancellor. As former Secretary General of the Christian Democratic Union, he worked closely with former Chancellor Angela Merkel. He later served as State Secretary at the Ministry of Defense. He left politics in 2021, but he's now stepping back into that world for one day.
I never wanted to sit in this chair because I know someone who sat in it for 16 years. Now, at least in this war game, I get to.
As Chancellor, his task is to hold everything together. He has to steer his government through the crisis, make decisions under time pressure, and at the same time ensure that Germany presents a united front to the outside world. In order for our participants to be able to speak openly, there are no sitting ministers or current office holders at the table. Everyone here, though, can draw from experience. They know how to navigate a crisis. But they do not have to worry about classified information or the sensitivities of a governing coalition.
Yes, Jörg Asmussen. Today I'm the finance minister.
Christiane Hoffmann. In my most recent role, I served as deputy government spokesperson in the previous German coalition government.
My name is Roderick Kiesewetter. I spent 30 years in the Bundeswehr. I'm a retired colonel and I've been a member of the Bundestag since 2009.
Ebad Zorn. In this war game, I'm serving as the Inspector General of the Bundeswehr. That was my role in real life as well.
You'll get to know the rest of the group later. This blue team faces the red team in the war game, the Russians.
My name is Alexander Gabuyev. I'm the director of the Carnegie Russia Eurasia Center in Berlin. And today, I'm the Russian president.
My name is Arndt Freitag von Loringhoven. I am a former German diplomat, and today I am the Russian foreign minister.
My name is Franz Stefan Gardi. I'm a military analyst, and today I'm the Russian military chief.
As the United States scales back its security commitments in Europe, expecting the continent to take responsibility for its own defense, Germany, Europe's largest economy, is playing a pivotal role. In a crisis in the Baltics, it would be NATO's logistical backbone and one of its decisive political actors. Berlin has also vowed to build the strongest conventional army on the continent. But is Germany ready to lead? For our simulation, we developed a scenario. It is entirely fictional, but not far-fetched. To make it plausible, we sought input from politicians, military officers, analysts, Ukraine experts, and specialists from Lithuania. At this point, I want to stress one thing. We are not trying to predict the future. This scenario is not meant to generate fear or to fuel escalation. It is a tool to test how Germany would function in a real emergency, where we are capable of acting and where we aren't. The scenario you are about to hear concludes in October 2026. Imagine that in the months leading up to then, Russia and Ukraine agree to a ceasefire. Negotiators on both sides sign a deal that freezes the current front line. At the same time, the Kremlin launches a charm offensive. It offers Germany long-term gas contracts at discounts of up to 20% and promotes investment in Eastern German industry. Russian state media suggest that, in Europe, only Germany can open a new phase of cooperation. In the Baltics, however, tensions are rising. Russia and Belarus begin a military exercise near the Lithuanian border. It is now September 2026. The news broadcasts you are about to hear were generated with artificial intelligence.
Despite the official announcement of a full withdrawal, around 12,000 Russian troops remain stationed in western Belarus after the Zapad 2026 exercise. In Vilnius, concern is growing that Moscow intends to expand its presence along NATO's border on a permanent basis.
Lithuanians are uneasy. Russia has used military exercises as a cover for military action before. During the Zapad 2021 drills, Moscow moved large amounts of equipment into Belarus. In February 2022, Russian and Belarusian forces were positioned unusually close to the Ukrainian border during another exercise. Shortly afterward, the assault on Kyiv began. In our simulation, Zapad 2026 does not look like a routine drill from Lithuania's perspective, but like the prelude to something larger. Shortly afterward, the Kremlin claims, without providing any evidence, that a humanitarian emergency is unfolding in Kaliningrad. Kaliningrad is a Russian exclave on the Baltic Sea, a small piece of Russian territory cut off from the rest of the country. To reach it by land, goods have to pass through Lithuania or Belarus. Moscow demands passage for what it calls a humanitarian convoy across Lithuanian territory. The Lithuanian government refuses. It fears the trucks may be carrying military equipment. Ever since that moment, lorries with unknown cargo have been lining up on the Belarusian side of the border. And then something else happens.
Two police officers have been killed near the Belarusian border in Lithuania. According to authorities, a freight train arriving from Moscow made an unscheduled stop. A patrol unit inspected the train and encountered armed men who opened fire. Lithuania's intelligence service says the suspects may be Russian special forces infiltrated for sabotage operations.
Suddenly, a video appears online that puts Germany at the center of the crisis. It shows men in uniform. They are allegedly abusing Russian-speaking teenagers in northeastern Lithuania. Russian state media claim that the men are German soldiers. Shortly afterward, Moscow demands the immediate withdrawal of the German brigade stationed in Lithuania. The video is fake, though. German troops were not present at the time in question. But it is too late. The propaganda machine is already in motion. In today's world, what matters is not always what is true, but what people believe. And Russia knows exactly how to shape its own narrative. In our simulation, we therefore also recreate the Russian disinformation space. There, the story sounds very different. Like in this clip from an influencer, also generated with artificial intelligence.
German soldiers are beating Russian kids just because they spoke Russian. 80 years ago, Germans came with tanks. Now they come with NATO. Is that defense or is that preparation for a war against Russian people?
Then, the online banking system used by millions of customers at Germany's savings banks goes down. Some ATMs stop working as well. The cause is a cyber attack on the bank's central IT service provider. Who is behind it is initially unclear. The final day our scenario describes is Tuesday, October 27th, early morning at the Federal Chancellery. For hours, reports have been coming in from Vilnius, Warsaw, and Brussels. Lithuania has informed Berlin that Russian troops are in combat formation along the Belarusian border. Once everyone has taken their seats around the table, the Chancellor opens the meeting.
From my perspective, we have two central areas of action. First, we need to respond publicly. What narrative do we present? What explanation do we give the people in Germany? Second, and this concerns me just as much, what measures are needed to protect the population? What steps can the Bundeswehr take internally to ensure it can act quickly if necessary? And are there additional areas, particularly in foreign policy, towards Poland and other neighbours, where we need to act now? I would welcome input from the respective experts around this table.
The defence minister picks up the thread. He is played by Roderich Kiesewetter, a member of the Bundestag for the Christian Democratic Union.
Thank you, Mr. Chancellor. First of all, I see that our Bundeswehr forces in Lithuania are under intense pressure. I strongly advise that, in coordination with the foreign minister, we send a clear signal to the Lithuanian public and beyond that our soldiers are in full accordance with the law.
Eberhard Zorn also addresses the situation of the German armed forces in Lithuania. As Inspector General of the Bundeswehr, he is Germany's highest-ranking soldier and serves as the federal government's senior military advisor.
We are currently in the process of building up the brigade in Lithuania to full strength. That means we have two German battalions stationed there.
Once fully built up, the brigade will consist of three combat units, two German units and one made up of troops from various NATO countries under German command. That means Germany has to coordinate closely with the other contributing nations.
As far as I know, the Netherlands and Norway are contributing troops there. That means we should first sit down with our multinational partners at the military level and compare assessments, both of the operational situation and of the political intentions of their governments.
The government spokesperson, Christiane Hoffmann, gives an overview of how the situation is portrayed in the press.
Let me begin with a brief look at the current media reporting. I would say the coverage so far has been appropriate and relatively restrained. The video involving the Bundeswehr in Lithuania is being correctly identified as disinformation and as fake.
The Interior Minister then takes the floor. In the simulation, the role is played by Irene Mihalic, a member of parliament from the Green Party.
Thank you, Mr. Chancellor. I would like to point out that we are currently under attack. The cyber attack on the central IT provider of Germany's saving banks targets critical infrastructure. In my view, we need to determine whether the server outage is affecting not only the online banking of millions of customers and roughly a third of ATMs, but also potentially our broader economic capacity.
The finance minister, played by the economist Jörg Asmussen, is also concerned about the partial outage at the savings banks. At the moment, millions of customers are unable to access their online accounts.
One third of the ATMs are not working. We need to clarify quickly what cash reserves are available at Germany's central bank and whether additional cash could be transported to Germany from neighboring countries at short notice. Because when people stand in front of an empty ATM, it unsettles them.
Securing cash reserves also falls under police powers to prevent and avert danger. And that is not something the federal government can simply order on its own. It requires coordination with the federal states, for example, to secure cash transports and to manage access to cash. Even if we were to advise people to withdraw more cash as a precaution, I do not want to see a repeat of what we experienced during the pandemic.
Germany is a federal system. Many internal security responsibilities lie within the 16 federal states, not with the national government. That means that Berlin cannot simply issue orders. It has to coordinate. Lines are forming at ATMs across Germany. In Duisburg, Magdeburg, Augsburg, the scenes look the same everywhere. People are worried about their savings. They are withdrawing more cash than usual. In some places, tensions are rising.
Do we have any indication that what the financial sector is experiencing right now originated in Russia?
The intelligence chief responds. In real life, Gerhard Konrad served as an officer of Germany's Federal Intelligence Service, BND.
The timing and the way this operation fits into the broader buildup of hybrid measures in recent months suggests that it does. We have to operate on that assumption.
Inside the blue team, the focus is scattered. Each ministry is concentrating on its own immediate concerns. The cyber attack, the savings banks, the public mood in Germany, the brigade in Lithuania. Then the foreign minister asks to speak.
Mr. Chancellor, dear colleagues, I'm not sure everyone here is grasping the seriousness of the situation.
This is Michael Roth, a long-serving foreign policy figure from the Social Democratic Party. He previously served as a Minister of State for Europe at Germany's Foreign Office.
Before this meeting, I spoke with my Lithuanian counterpart. They are deeply shaken. They expect a clear signal of solidarity from us, and now.
In Lithuania, there is fear that Ukraine was only the beginning, and that the Baltic states could be next on the Kremlin's list. In reality, phone lines now would be buzzing in capitals across Europe and beyond. Not only Lithuania would be reacting. NATO would already be launching political consultations and military planning. In our war game, we deliberately focus on the response of the German federal government. Not because other actors are unimportant, but because any simulation has limits, and because we want to understand one central question. Is Germany prepared for a real crisis, and where do our weaknesses lie? We have, however, assigned several key international roles. The US Secretary of State, the NATO Secretary General, the Polish Prime Minister, and the President of the European Commission. On the day of the war game, they are not present in Hamburg, but join individual calls from Washington, Brussels, and Warsaw, just as they would in reality. You will get to know them over the next episodes. One more important point. Before the simulation began, participants received only the scenario as preparation. On the day itself, they act freely. My colleagues and I are present as observers, but we do not interfere. There are, however, rules. The war game has four rounds, and each round must end with decisions to which then the other side can respond. During the simulation, the blue team, representing the German government, is separated from the red team, representing Russia, by a narrow corridor. The teams cannot hear each other. On the Russian side, three men sit around a table and deliberate. The president sums up their plans.
We want to fracture NATO's unity.
The man speaking here knows Putin's system from the inside. Most participants in the English version of this podcast are voiced by fellow journalists, but the voice you are hearing here belongs to Alexander Gabuyev himself. Gabuyev grew up in Moscow. As a young journalist, he reported from the center of Russian power, the Kremlin. Between 2007 and 2014, he met Vladimir Putin, spoke with Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, and traveled with then-President Dmitry Medvedev. And Gabuyev says, no one will stop Putin from attacking another country if he believes he can get away with it.
If he wakes up one morning, whether in the Kremlin or at his residence outside Moscow, and says, in 3 months, we are marching into the Baltics, who in the Russian government is going to tell him, sir, you're out of your mind, That's too dangerous. We are not doing it.
According to that logic, this is the most dangerous moment.
When the war in Ukraine ends, Russia will have a massive army, larger than before the war and with extensive recent combat experience. Europe, by contrast, has only just begun to rearm. This gap in time is extremely dangerous.
And it is precisely this window that our war game explores. Gabuyev and his two colleagues have to think like the man in the Kremlin. Their objective is not simply territory. It is to render NATO unable to act. Now, Franz Stefan Gadi speaks. He is an Austrian military analyst. In the simulation, he plays Russia's military chief.
Ultimately, this is not about the Baltic states. It is about reshaping Europe's security architecture so that it aligns more closely with our interests than the current one does. To achieve that, we have to weaken NATO and undermine the European Union at its foundations.
What Gadi is describing mirrors what Vladimir Putin himself has demanded. Shortly before launching the full-scale invasion of Ukraine, the Russian president gave a televised address in which he laid out what he called his core demands to the West.
And finally, rolling back the bloc's military capability and infrastructure in Europe to where they were in 1997 when the NATO-Russia Founding Act was signed.
That would mean rolling back the alliance to a time before Poland, the Czech Republic, Hungary, Romania, or the Baltic states had joined. No NATO combat troops, no bases, no infrastructure in Central and Eastern Europe. In effect, it would create a security order in which Russia helps decide which countries are protected and which are not. In the war game, the Russian military chief defines precisely that as the objective.
Our objective remains the same. We want a European security architecture that closely resembles the one in place in 1997, meaning no permanent NATO forces stationed in Eastern Europe.
The red team believes it holds the upper hand.
Our advantage is speed, the ability to make decisions quickly. In that regard, we are certainly ahead of Germany and NATO.
While democracies have to debate and balance competing interests, decision-making in the Kremlin is far more centralized.
The president wants us to establish a humanitarian corridor.
A brief reminder. Moscow claims that Kaliningrad is facing a humanitarian emergency and uses that as justification for what it calls a relief convoy. Trucks from Belarus are supposed to cross Lithuanian territory to deliver alleged aid supplies to the Russian exclave.
Let me stress one point from a purely military perspective. We can establish fire control over the Suwalki Gap without having to deploy troops directly into Lithuania.
What the Russian team is outlining amounts to nothing less than an invasion of Lithuania, an attack on a NATO member state. Even if Moscow tries to disguise it as a humanitarian measure, German troops are stationed in Lithuania as well. The question now is whether the German government recognizes what is coming, and if, together with its allies, it can prevent it. That is what episode 2 is about. This was Ernstfall. What if Russia attacks NATO? Inside a German war game. The series consists of 5 episodes. If you have any questions or remarks, write us an email to wargame@welt.de. That's wargame@welt.de. Script and storytelling, Carolina Drüten and Antonia Beckermann. Production and sound design, Marvin Schwarz. Project leads, Antonia Beckermann, Carolina Drüten and Caroline Turzer. Research support, Jan Rosenkranz. Academic guidance, Josef Werbowski and Philipp Jan Schäfer from the German Wargaming Center at Helmut Schmidt University, the Bundeswehr University in Hamburg. Cover design, Dominik Schmidt. Our special thanks go to the participants of the wargame: David McAllister, Jörg Asmussen, Gerhard Konrad, Alexander Gabuyev, Franz Stefan Gadi, Christiane Hoffmann, Roderich Kiesewetter, Bad Wormekot, Arndt Freitag von Loringhofen, Oana Lungescu, Irene Mihalic, Jeff Radke, Michael Roth, Peter Tauber, Christoph Unger and Eberhard Zorn.
We're grateful to the fellow journalists who lent their voices to the English language version of our German participants' quotes. Daniel Dillenboehmer, Stephanie Bolson, Francis Dernley, Henry Donovan, Jacob Eckstein, Philip Fritz, Eric Kirschbaum, Chris Lundy, Nicholas Potter, James Rothwell and Konstantin Schreiber.
We would also like to thank the Helmut Schmidt University in Hamburg for providing the venue, as well as Alan Edwards, Marlene Badun, Tobias Grabow, Till Henniges, Karl Hufnagel, Elias Jakob, Thorsten Kodalle, Nico Lange and Wim Ort for their support on site. And Nana Brink, Kai Brinkmann and Nils Lange for their valuable contributions to the conceptual discussions.